Good morning, Chairman. Stephen Mayne, I'm a small shareholder in Orco, also a small shareholder in Orco Equity, Head Record Realty, and one of the Rubicons. I've just got a couple of issues I want to draw out with you on how you're managing the conflicts of interest which come with this sort of blizzard of transactions we're having with our associated funds. Now, I've sort of got a sense from the CEO's comments that there's a little bit of investor reticence in terms of further committing to future funds. We've scaled back the fees in Record Realty as a sign of that. What I'm interested in is the related party transactions on page 127 of the annual report. And in some occasions on these, I'm on both sides as a shareholder in both vehicles. But they do look a little high in terms of the amount that you're drawing from each transaction. For instance, the property deal in the US, US $223 million, a fee for us of 14.6. In terms of the HIT, the Orco HIT transaction, talks about a restructure or sale of a business in New Zealand, $29 million in revenue for us from that. And just specifically on that, there's no discussion of the value of the assets involved. So looking firstly at that New Zealand transaction, we've got $29 million in revenue. What was the value of the asset that was actually dealt with there? I mean, there's no disclosure on that. It's just there's a related party transaction. We took out $29 million. What else can you tell us about that transaction as a start?
Okay, just repeat the two questions, Steve, please.
Well, in all those related party transactions listed on page 127, the fees that we seem to be drawing out, for instance, another one is the wind energy deal, which says that we drew out revenues of $57.8 million on that. There's no disclosure of the value of the transaction. So there's an awful lot of related party transactions. There's no detail on the size of the assets or the value of the deals in the annual report. It just says that we're ripping out huge fees, which is great for us up front. But obviously, if we've now got reticence from the investors on the other side, there's a market confidence question about whether we're gouging these funds.
I understand. I mean, let me first give you the structure that's set up to ensure that the issues are addressed. We have a related party committee, which is chaired by Bob Mansfield. Our deputy chairman and independent director. That committee reviews every single transaction where there is a potential for a related party to ensure that what occurs is done at arm's length. That committee clearly, in an organisation which involves the parent company, Alco, being the manager and investor in each of the subsidiary funds, and we shouldn't forget Alco's philosophy is to be a significant shareholder in all of the funds it creates as well, so there is a clear alignment of interests. By us being a participant in the downstream vehicle, that is the management company. We're not there saying we're going to gouge out fees and not be sitting on the other side. And in fact, the brief that David Clark has, as the incoming CEO, is to ensure that every single one of our satellite funds gets back to performing extremely well with broad-based investor confidence. And why do I say that? I say that simply because the sustainability of your business model requires investor confidence in the downstream vehicle. So at a procedural level, I clearly don't sit on the related party committee, and nor should I, nor can I, but the related party committee reviews every single transaction and satisfies itself as to the arm's length nature of that. I'll hand over to Bob in case he has anything further to add on that point, Stephen.
Thanks, Dave. Hi, Stephen. As chairman of the related party committee, I approach every single decision on the basis that if I was asked to stand up in a court of law and justify the decision from a process point of view, could I do it? And I'm sure I represent Sir Rod Ennington and also Barbara Ward with that same degree of responsibility we have in the related party issues that are involved with ALCO. There are a lot. I'd like to think in future years there might be fewer, but it is part and parcel, certainly the transition phase of the business, and would always be part of what we have to deal with in the ALCO business model. What do we look for? We look for total visibility. We look for total arm's length nature of the transactions. We look for market comparisons on every issue that are presented to us in relation to fees, interest rates, and any other charges that are involved. And the company secretary will vouch for the number of discussions that I have with him in relation to making sure that in some cases we just don't have one comparison, we have several, and we do absolute justice to that process, bearing in mind the very clear responsibilities that you're outlining. It's a fact of the business model, and as chairman of the committee, I can assure you we approach it with the utmost responsibility. With regard to the market, I think it is an understandable question, particularly when we haven't been around in the listed vein for as long as other companies have been that do have this same sort of related party challenge. We have to prove ourselves over time. I'm sure that the disciplines we've got in place will let us do that, and we look forward to getting to the stage when that question is still asked and the responsibility put on us, but we've proven that we've managed it effectively.
And Bob, how do you actually manage the meeting process? I mean, Sir Rod's one of the busiest men in the world. I was just in New York with him last week at the News Corp AGM. He's on Rio, chairman of Melbourne Major Events. He missed 4 of the 17 ordinary all-code board meetings this year. He's a very busy man. He wasn't able to make it to the Rio EGM a month ago in Melbourne. Lives in Melbourne. Barbara and yourself are in Sydney. You've all attended 47 out of 47. So what exactly constitutes a meeting of the Related Party Transactions Committee? Are you just on a phone hookup? You've been faxed all the documents? I mean, because there's very complex transactions. You're very busy people. You've had 47 meetings during the year. What actually constitutes a meeting? Just take me through this. I mean, Rubicon, massive Related Party Transaction. Clearly, you must have had a meeting before you sign off on the deal. So just how did that process
Absolutely. Work? Absolutely. It's not as complex as what you are suggesting, because it's very common sense how you approach it. The basic facts are distributed by management to the committee. The committee can interact with the company secretary from any legal aspects or clarification aspects, or the management itself to answer any questions they've got, which they do independently. There are some that are run-of-the-mill transactional issues that are pretty easy to do. There are others, such as Rubicon, where there's a lot of time and effort applied to the situation. Face-to-face meetings if possible. If Rod Eddington can't attend, he's always available at a phone call from myself and Barbara for a joint conference call. And we recognise the challenges you're talking about. It's part and parcel of being a global company. And we have to execute to that sense of responsibility I outlined earlier.
How many deals have you knocked back?
As far as, I mean, knocking back totally, probably only a couple. As far as questioning, I'd say close to all that have been presented have been questioned for comparables and visibility and all the rest of it.
Because the whole Macquarie defence is that, you know, they've released all these statistics. We've looked at 100, and, I don't know the figures, but we've looked at 100-something transactions with VIG, and we've only done 30, you know, that's the way they prove it. And they talk about their independent directors on various funds rather than the independent directors on Macquarie. So you're saying you've got an independent directors group on Orco, which has knocked back, 2 out of 49. And, I mean, I heard Jeff Morgan give a talk yesterday. He was the only independent director on Orco equity partners during the Qantas transaction. So, you know, he's just one lonely guy sitting there with all our related party transactions and with all co-equity partners talking about putting $1 billion into Qantas. So,
Stephen, just to correct you, there were two independent directors. Mark Sterling's independent.
Alright, so I know that Macquarie talks up all their independent directors on the various funds, so I would have thought that you need two sides of this transaction, and you, rather than a strike rate of 98% in terms of our esteemed independent related party transaction committee, that, you know, the fact that you're signing off such a huge proportion, that the related party fees are so huge that various of the funds are now trading at big discounts, I think we've got a market sort of a reputational question here over our structure. And obviously you're dealing with it with Record, but it's just we've probably hit the share price, and I just think...
Stephen, can I just mention two things, mate? Firstly, we're talking here today as ALCO. Separately, each of the entities that does a downstream externally managed fund has its own R&D, and that R&D in turn is used to us. At that level, at each of the RE level, which REs are majority controlled by independent directors, there's a lot of transactions that do not proceed, okay? And when we come to the ALCO board, and the RPC, it is only the independent directors who vote with respect to any transaction that has a related party element to it. So there is no involvement whatsoever by any of the executives in any related party deals that relates to ALPA. And you've got to see the other side of the coin as well, which is our REs being predominantly RFML and therefore an AML. Those three REs review absolutely independently each transaction. So the RPC looks at the related party number purely from an ALPA point.